Yes, so this is a very short purport, and you know, those of you who give classes, sometimes it may be perceived as something very limiting, having to speak on a very short purport. When giving class, one usually sits down beforehand and thinks of what he or she wants to speak about. So likewise, I was sitting down and trying to figure out what should I speak about, having such a short purport. In fact, this verse is very tightly related to the following verses, and even the previous verse. So one could actually take several verses together, put them into one class. So I was trying to figure out myself, and I even discussed with Bhakta Nimesh, who is the organizer of the classes. I was asking if I could perhaps join this verse with the following few verses. So I was going back and forth, and finally I decided to speak on, you could say, a secondary subject, which is touched upon, or it's extrapolated from what Prabhupada's speaking here and what the translation gives. Which is, sometimes it's all right. Obviously the main point here in this verse is Krishna's impartiality. And this is a huge topic. I even considered speaking about Krishna's partiality, and that's perhaps why I said partial. Krishna is partial, always partial. Krishna is always partial. And that's very extensively dealt with by one of our acharyas in Sri Paramatma Sandarbha, that's His Divine Grace Jiva Goswami, discusses that at length. So anyone who wants to know about Krishna's partiality can look into that Sandarbha. And Krishna is simultaneously partial and impartial, and he quotes a very nice verse there. It's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Prahlad Maharaj, where he compares Krishna to a Kalpavriksha tree. And a Kalpavriksha tree is found in the spiritual world, and the Kalpavriksha tree has a very interesting ability. That is, it's able to fulfill everyone's desires according to how you approach it. So Krishna is a desire tree, and likewise his devotees are compared to a desire tree. Therefore we recite every morning Vancha Kalpa Taru. Devotees are, we offer obeisances to the devotee Vaishnavas, all the Vaishnavas who would like the desire trees. Now, a desire tree fulfills one's desires, but think about it, you know, every person who approaches the tree is going to have a different desire, because every person has different set of mind, different tastes, different ideas of how things should be done. So the desire trees are fulfilling everyone's desire according to how they're approached. So similarly, Krishna, he fulfills everyone's desires. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eku bahunam yovidadati kaman. In the Katha Upanishad, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it is said that Krishna, amongst all the eternals, living entities, that's us, there is one supreme eternal living entity who's been fulfilling the desires of all living entities since time immemorial. Therefore, Krishna can never be said to be partial, Because he is fulfilling everyone's desires. Just think about it. Can any one of you claim the same thing? Can any one of you say, I'm able to fulfill everyone else's desire? In fact, we are unable to fulfill anyone's desire. And that's why we run into so many conflicts and so many difficulties in life. But Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is able to reciprocate perfectly with all living entities. And that puts him in the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because there's only one person who can do that. And we find in this world that personalities who are capable of reciprocating with a large number of beings, of human beings and living entities, they are considered as very, very special. In fact, those personalities are generally very advanced spiritually, because you've got to be like Krishna to be able to do as he does. And this gives us the definition of a Vaishnava. He's like Vishnu. That's exactly what Vaishnava means, like Vishnu. In other words, the Vaishnavas, they exhibit the same qualities as Vishnu. And one of those qualities is the ability to reciprocate with many, many, many persons, many individuals. We can certainly not imitate the great Vaishnavas, and what to speak of Krishna, but we can learn from the example. That's not the main topic I was going to speak about today. That's the main topic, obviously, certainly, it's the main topic of the verse, Krishna's impartiality. So how impartial Krishna is, if he's able to be impartial even to demons. I don't want to speak about that because I'm sure that that was spoken already about and will be spoken again about by next speakers. So I thought today I'm focusing on this. It says in the verse, in a translation, that Narada Muni responded to an inquiry put forward by Maharaj Yudhishthira. How did Narada Muni respond to his inquiry? Does anyone remember? What did he do in order to respond? He told him something, right? Yes, he told him a story. So it says here, the sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts. Yes, so the Shastras are full of stories. And telling stories is a very, very powerful and commonly used tool to illustrate various points. In fact, in my short practice of Krishna consciousness, I have noticed that those speakers who are good at telling stories are very favored by everyone. They're preferred. So why is telling stories such a powerful thing? Well, for one thing, telling stories is very entertaining, right? Everyone wants to hear stories. Especially when we're young. My wife was telling me that when she was a young girl, she would so much love to hear stories. But the problem was that her grandmother, she grew up without her mother, her grandmother, she was not a good reader. So whilst reading, she would, I don't know what's the English word for that, but we have a word in Bulgarian language. When someone reads and they go like this, Lord is always impartial, not very smooth and flowing reading, very short and has, how do you say, slow and kind of interrupted, intermittent, because she couldn't read properly. She didn't have the practice of reading. And that was one of the problems in her childhood. And the other problem was her auntie, who was the other woman in the family, in the household, whenever she would start reading, she would fall asleep after a short while. So she was forced to learn to read herself. And she learned to read herself the stories. And she loved reading stories. I'm sure every one of you like being told stories by your parents, by your grandparents, especially grandparents in many cases. And one common thing about all these stories is that there's usually a moral, right? Usually there is a lesson in each story that we learn. I'll tell you a short story with a lesson, which I heard when I was a child. It's a story which is commonly told to children when they're young, because it's got a very important lesson. There's countless stories like this. So this story is of two brothers. They were the sons of a farmer. So that farmer sent his two sons to go to the forest one morning. And one of the sons, on leaving, asked the father, "Father, could you tell us what we should do if the wheel of the cart," they were going with a cart, "breaks? What are we supposed to do?" I was looking for the exact word in English, because it's a word of one Bulgarian word. That's a Bulgarian story. And I found the word, it's an expression, willy-nilly, right? Everyone knows what willy-nilly is. It means you do something even though you're not willing to do it, right? Is that correct? Or whimsically. Is it whimsically? Is there a word which signifies that someone does something unwillingly? Grudgingly. Okay, so the father told the boys that, and in answer to that question, if the cart breaks, then you should start calling for the, you know, unwillingness, if you can say that. I don't know if there's an English word like that, but anyway. So the boy said, okay, fine. So they headed toward the forest. They were gathering, you know, wood the whole day. And towards the end of the day, they started going back home. And sure enough, as one of the boys was doubting and anticipating, the wheel of the cart broke and they got stuck. So what did they do? They followed the instructions of their father. So they started calling out, "Unwillingness!" Oh, because you said grudgingly, but that's like an adverb, right? "Unwillingness! Come help!" So they were calling and calling. No one was responding. No one was coming. So these guys, they were thinking, what should we do? They were calling, "Unwillingness, come help." But you know, they noticed that it was getting darker and darker. And if, you know, they were found in the night, in the forest, you know, if the night came down, they were going to face a lot of trouble because of the wild animals in the night. The wolves come out, the bears, and all these jackals, wild animals. So it becomes very dangerous in the forest, just like in a jungle. So they finally decided to try and fix the cart themselves And that's exactly what they did, you know. They fixed the card. They tried here, to try there, you know. They put everything down first, fixed the wheel on, somehow attached it to the axle, and managed to fix the card, and went home. And on returning home, they asked the father, "Dear father, why did you tell us to call for the unwillingness, if I may use this word, if the car would break?" And the father said, "Well, what did you do? Well, we were calling and calling and calling, and no one responded. And finally, we had to fix the car ourselves." Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. We had to fix the car ourselves. And the father said, so that's the point, you know. Unwillingness will never come and help you, because it means you're not willing to do something, right? It's not going to come. It's unwilling. Anyway. So the point of my instruction was that you call and call and call until you realize that it's all down to you, actually. You have to, with your own hands, fix the car. No one else is going to do it for you. So in life, he said, this is how things work out in life. It's always down to you to do your work. Don't expect anyone else to come and do your work instead of you. So that was a story which I heard when I was a young boy. And it stuck in my mind so much. And it's a very important story. And there is a proverb like that also in Bulgarian that it doesn't translate very well in English, but it goes like this. I'll try to translate it for you. The wolf, you know, it's got a skin, and the wolf, it's got its skin together, intact, because he does his work alone. Because he makes sure he does his work. It doesn't translate very well, but it's the same point of the story. So don't expect anyone else to do your work for you. And a responsible man will try and do their work. They will never try to find excuses that why they couldn't do because someone else was supposed to help them and they couldn't do it, and like that. Ultimately, it's up to us to do our work. So yeah, this is one story. I'm sure many of you can tell us different stories like that. And every folk heritage has many, many such stories. And these stories usually have a very important moral, important lesson that we need to learn. So likewise, Narada Muni here is using the tool of telling stories to illustrate a point to Maharaj Yudhishthira. And the point he's making is, he's trying to explain how Krishna is impartial. So he's quoting an example. He's telling a story. Telling stories is such a powerful way of transmitting knowledge, of imparting knowledge, that many, many great personalities in the past have used it. Yesterday, I will admit one activity that I performed. I watched one DVD. It was a religious one from a different culture, though, from a different religious tradition. I watched the Jesus of Nazareth. You know, I wasn't here for the kirtan. I should have been, probably. So I watched Jesus of Nazareth. And in that film, I'm sure most of you have seen it, Jesus told many stories. He was telling parables. That's how they call them, parables. And one of the stories he told to children, he was in the temple, in a great temple of the Jews, and two of the rabbis, they asked him a question, challenging question, and he did not actually answer the question. And he said, children, come, I'll tell you stories. So he answered the question of the rabbis. He taught them a lesson by telling a story to the children. And the story was interesting. You know, he told the story of one father who asked his son to do something, and he said, "I'm not going to do it." And he still did it. And the other son, he said, "Okay, I will do it," but he never did it. And he said, and he asked the children, "So who is a good son? Who is the obedient son according to you?" And they said, "The first son, because he said no, but he still did what his father asked him to do." And the second said, "Yes, I'm going to do it," but he didn't do it. So he actually compared the rabbis to the second son. They say, "Yes, yes, yes, yes." They say, you know, what the words of God are, and, you know, the teachings of God, but they never follow them themselves. It's a great story. Very simple story, which even children understand. Of course, to understand the lesson, you need to have some intelligence. Or if you don't have the required intelligence, you need someone to explain to you. So that's why, in the case of a very important story told in the Bhagavatam, the story of Puranjana, again, telling story. Narada Muni, again, the same person, to another person. Narada Muni is telling story to King Prachini Parishat. And he's telling him a story, which is a fictitious one. It's a fiction, or you could say allegory. And he's telling allegorical story, but unless Prabhupada gives us the purport and the previous acharyas, would we be able to figure it out, what is what? The wife of Puranjan, for example, is the intelligence. I mean, how would you figure these things out? Everyone probably come up with a different idea of what is what in the story. So therefore, it's so important that we have purports, we have the explanation by the previous acharyas. Generally, stories are meant for non-philosophical persons. If you take, for example, the Upanishads, there are stories in the Upanishads, but in the most philosophical treatise by Vyasadev, Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra, I don't think he gives stories there. But in the purport to those, and Mahabharata and the Puranas, there are certainly many stories that illustrate different points. Stories are very important because also they allow us to... why they're so powerful? Because they allow us, whilst listening to the story, they allow the listener to see an example of something being enacted. And also it allows the listener to... Oftentimes what happens is the listener identifies himself with the story, and therefore he's willing to follow the example of the hero or the main person being discussed. Why do we like watching films? This is exactly what I did yesterday. I watched a film. Why do we like watching films? Because films or movies are actually nothing but a story. Even advertisement, commercials, they're nothing but stories. That's why they're so powerful. So watching a film, the watcher, the person who is watching, they actually identify with the hero and the heroine, and they imbibe the message, the story. Now, films of past or the stories of the past, they were usually having a positive and a negative character. Nowadays, more and more, I suppose, the movies are having only negative side, you know. The moral of the film is that bad is good, and, you know, bad always prevails. And previously, the stories would always be like, you know, good versus evil. Evil always wins. It's always victorious, and evil is always punished. But we're not so sentimental anymore. We're more practical. And, you know, bad is ultimately victorious and, you know, wins the battle. So watching films can be, or listening to stories can be a very powerful experience, and is certainly a very powerful experience. We've got to be careful what stories we listen to, right? We can't listen to stories and watch movies indiscriminately. Well, Prabhupada didn't like the idea of devotees going to the cinema very much. For the same reason, because when we go to the cinema, we are listening to a story and we're going to imbibe the lessons or the moral of that story. And if the story is written by a hardcore materialist, the conclusions are going to be very materialistic. What are the conclusions of films, very especially Hollywood movies? Anyone? Be wise, be strong. This one of the Hollywood stars said that. And I don't want to say the third part of it. That's Madonna. If I tell you, it's just gonna spoil everything. Anyhow, so yeah, the moral usually is, or the conclusion is that happy end. The hero and the heroine, they embrace each other and walk in this in sunset on the beach, and they're happy ever after. And life basically, the moral is, life is meant for enjoyment. And if you want to enjoy, you have to be like the hero, who is a tough, macho. Have to go out in the world and be brutal and rude to everyone, and just make sure you make a lot of dosh, a lot of money, which will procure you all happiness and good fortune. This is an illusion. This is the story of a conditioned soul. And it's usually not like that in the so-called real life. It's different. So we've definitely have to be careful what stories we listen to. And probably the most favorite story that we like telling, or type of stories we like telling, is stories about ourselves. Isn't it? Everyone likes to talk about themselves. We sit with a friend for prasadam and, you know what happened to me yesterday? And then we start telling our pastimes. So wonderful. It's so amazing. This is going to be like that, spontaneously, naturally, until the time when we realize that our real self, or the dearest self to us, is Krishna, is the super soul. Krishna is always with us. And our real interest lies in Vishnu, as Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter. Our real interest lies in Vishnu. So when we understand that, and we become actually attracted to Krishna, we wouldn't be able to help but tell stories about Krishna. And that's how you know who is an advanced Vaishnava, someone who can't help but tell a story about Krishna, and also give the moral of the story. So pure devotees are generally found to be very fond of telling stories about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes. And we, in our practice of Krishna consciousness, we are expected to cultivate the same. We need to constantly try to associate with spiritual vibration, sound vibration, or constantly hear stories of Krishna. And so much that one day we find ourselves being unable to talk about anything else than just telling stories about Krishna. I'm not a good storyteller, unfortunately. I hope one day I'll learn the art of telling stories. It's not something that you cannot learn, but certainly some persons are very much talented and capable of telling stories, and generally their classes are very animated. One such example is Gauranga Prabhu. He was here recently. I wasn't unfortunately able to attend his classes, but I overheard one of his classes, and he was getting the audience to laugh, to participate. It's not a monologuous kind of thing, because he got the audience to respond to his teachings, because he was telling stories, many stories. Actually, his classes are full of stories, full of examples. So it's a good way of transmitting some message. So this is my class today. I just wanted to speak about telling stories. It's a very common thing we do, and it's a very powerful way of giving message to someone. Narada Muni is using it certainly all the time. Many times, Bhagavatam is like that. Someone asks a question, and then a reference is given to a story from the past. And it's like a very powerful way of doing things. Okay, I'll stop there if there's any questions.